The following podcast is broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, this is Tasman Report, a podcast about the work and people at Tasman District Council. I'm John Bullock, and in this episode, the plan stop has been lifted for Plan Change 81, the annual plan for 2026-27 is now open for feedback, a new speed campaign takes to Tasman roads, and Mohua Golden Bay plans for emergencies in the event of a natural disaster. A big headline for Tasman in recent days was Plan Stop, lifted for Plan Change 81. The proposed plan change is intended to enable approximately 4,250 new homes and an additional 80 hectares of business land. Environmental Policy Manager Barry Johnson joins us to talk about what is expected from this plan change.
At a high level, it's providing for the next 10 years worth of growth. So that's for housing and for business land, because we know people need jobs and they need somewhere to live. So it very much is focused on that. A key component of this plan change too is introducing new urban design requirements. So the new environments that do get built are of a high quality, nice places to live, work and play.
So here the council can't actually dictate, you know, say when your house has to be painted blue or green, yellow over here, and it has to have five bedrooms. This is about putting a guide around it, a direction, I guess, in a way to help shape good design, as to what you were saying.
Yeah, that's right. It's creating an envelope. It's creating an enabling environment. So rather than having too many prescriptive rules, the focus of this plan change is nice outcomes, great outcomes for people, great places for people to live, but allowing the flexibility for that to happen in a way that actually meets the needs of the community and of the market.
Plan Change 81 will now move into what is called a streamlined planning process, which provides a structured and time-bound pathway for progressing the plan change. It includes further consultation, technical updates, public notification, submissions, further submissions, hearing, and decision-making by an independent panel.
So as part of notification, the council will write to all those affected landowners. And also, if you want to find out if you are affected, you can go to the council's e-plan, the TRMP online, and you can search for your property, and that will bring up the rules, and it can identify whether your property is affected by the plan change.
And then from that, this sort of might help inform what submission you may make.
Yes, it does, very much so. And we have a new submission portal online that's very easy to access. It has all that plan change documentation in there, and it steps you through the process of how to make a submission and the things you need to include into your submission.
That was Environmental Policy Manager Barry Johnson. And the dates for notification for Plan Change 81 will be announced shortly. And at that time, the call for submissions will open, and we'll announce dates for a series of Meet the Planners community events, webinars, and links to documentation and resources to help with making a submission. Would be nice to have, that's a must have this but not that. In shorthand, these are some of the questions for feedback that is now open to the Tasman 2026-27 annual plan. Dwayne Fletcher, Council's Strategic Planning and Enterprise Manager, joins us now to discuss how the annual and long-term plans work together.
Well, starting with the long-term plan, it's a 10-year plan that looks at our programs and our services over the long term. And it includes a whole bunch of work on things like financial strategy and funding policies, and helps kind of set the North Star for the council for that 10-year horizon. Every year we do a check on that, you know, how our budget's going, how's our funding going, and sometimes we need to correct it. And so an annual plan is really just looking 1 year ahead, and you know, the idea is that we refine our long-term plan for that year a little bit.
I guess that takes into account that the world is a pretty fluid place, as we have got in the current situation.
Completely. Government rules change, the macro environment changes, and yeah, essentially we need to take account of those things. In our case, for example, a really good example would be the storm that we had in June, July last year. So that meant council had to confront $14 million of costs that we weren't planning on and on incurring in the long-term plan, and now we need to think about how we fund that.
I was going to ask you, what is the difference between the current one we've got out for submissions and the previous year? But the flooding would probably have to be that plus the issue in the Middle East.
That's true. We've also had quite a bit of inflation and construction costs creep into some of our projects and the cost of running our infrastructure. And most people won't be aware that we also have, you know, $2.4 billion of assets. And when there's inflation, the value of those assets go up. And we have to fund a thing called depreciation, and that's having a bit of an impact on us at the moment.
I was going to also ask you, when you look at a council, there's more to it than maybe the service centres. I mean, we're a landowner, we property, we do services. How do you describe it in a nutshell?
Council is a mix of at least 20 different businesses offering over 200 different services. I mean, it's a really complex beast. You've got massive wastewater treatment plants at one end and library services at another. So it's a very diverse business.
What, given the financial pressures and changes that we face, what, when you sat down to look at this, the annual plan, what were you looking at that possibly would be the major changes you'd have to make? Or where would you go? What are the tools you're going to use for the future?
One of the things is that for the last 3 years, we've been looking at our budgets fairly tightly. And constantly cut back over the last few years. So there wasn't much in the cupboard for this annual plan, which is why we ended up with the 9.9 when you take on board the cost of the storm and other things and inflation. Heading into the long-term plan, what we're trying to do is have a very good conversation with our council about the services and the standard of those services that it really wants to run. So that won't affect the annual plan, but it will affect that sort of 10-year longer-term plan. And we intend to have a conversation with our community later this year and next year about what those possible changes might look like and what the price of those would be.
People looking at the council operation, and you look at, say, a community project, and we have a number of those sticking away at the moment. Does the annual plan look at that and go, right, okay, well, listen, we're going to have to change that project slightly and modify expenditure there, or are projects set and train and they just keep going? And so I'm trying to get at how much flexibility do you really have?
Yeah, in terms of an individual project, look, they're constantly value engineering, you know, which means how do we get the best bang for buck out of this particular, the outcome that we're needing? And the capital, the community facilities are actually a really good example of that. So, you know, the Wakefield and Brightwater facilities, you know, there's a bit of a review of what the current plans are at the moment. Yep. To see if we can make it more affordable. And there's about, you know, $70 or $80 million of other capital projects in any given year, and the team are constantly looking at, you know, what we actually need to deliver. So there's always a plan, but when it comes to delivery, all of that is reviewed again, and we try to figure out whether we can deliver it more effectively. And there have been some notable exceptions where we've saved, you know, I'm not sure about millions, but certainly hundreds of thousands of dollars on our budget because we've done that value engineering. And every year, we also review the capital program as a whole. So, for example, we've tried to take out tens of millions of dollars out of our capital program for the annual plan to try and make the overall year more affordable.
And I guess in the submissions and engagement process that we have ongoingly with our community, what some of the big considerations are trying to get for the community to get your head around what are the services you want and then understanding how they impact on other things, right? Because everything has an impact.
Oh, completely. And the things that the community values are often the things that they can touch and see and interact with, like the libraries. They're highly valued by our community. One of the things that I think is often overlooked is much of the value we offer is in things that people take for granted every day, unfortunately. So it's just because it's well run and it's invisible. Turning on your tap and getting clean water that's safe is essential to a thriving economy, to a thriving community, but most of it's underground and most people don't see it.
Talking of waters, we've had changes in that area there, and that affects how you'll actually see your rates bill in a way, isn't it? It's going to separate the water out from the other things. Give us a picture on that.
That's right. So the government's local water done well reforms has made it clear that they want to make sure that water, three waters, that's wastewater, you know, flush your toilet, stormwater, what happens when it rains, and potable water, the water that comes out of your tap, are treated and treated to a good standard and well managed. And part of that is signalling how we manage that and how we fund that separately to the rest of the council business. So in the future, in this current annual plan, you'll see that we've signalled clearly how much our 9.9, how much of that is made up of free waters rates to try and meet the government's expectations and look after the infrastructure. And we're proposing to kind of keep that that separation in the future, so people will see the kind of free waters cost and the rest of council costs separately.
Okay, looking at what you're now asking the community to do with the plan, you've published it, obviously this is a submission process. What's your hope from the feedback? You know, what are you hoping to see there in terms of like analysis or, you know, further discussion?
The thing that would be most helpful to us is for people to really tell us the services that they highly value at council. Not so much for the annual plan, but as we think about the future for that 10-year plan, what's really precious to them, what's really important. When push comes to shove and council needs to make trade-offs against different priorities, what are the things that they really value? And that'll help us set our North Star into the future better.
That was Duane Fletcher, Council's Strategic Planning and Enterprise Manager, discussing how the long-term and annual plans work together for the future of Tasman. And the annual plan is now open for feedback on Shape Tasman till Sunday the 3rd of May. Better Together, a new road safety campaign focusing on speeds on rural roads, has just been launched. It draws in input and expertise from various agencies, including the crew here at Tasman District Council. Darren Palmer has more.
The number of serious crashes on Tasman District roads is increasing. A New Zealand Transport Agency audit of our roading network found that crash and casualty numbers have been trending upward over the last 5 years, with a total of 82 crashes involving death or serious injury. So we're joining police, NZTA and ACC to support the Better Together campaign to deter Tasman drivers from driving above the speed limit. District Road Policing Manager Inspector Marty Tunley says as a community we mustn't tolerate this dangerous behaviour of driving above the speed limit. He says when people choose to speed, they're putting not only themselves but their passengers and other people on the roads at risk.
The car that I used to drive on when I first started to drive, the cars these days have changed dramatically. One thing that hasn't changed is that whereas cars are safer these days in a crash, the human body isn't and never will be. There's a perception that the longer you've been a driver, or even some people even shorten their driving career, believe they are very good drivers. And with that perception becomes, well, I can just push it a little bit more and go a little bit faster. But what happens is, and you don't realise it, you're increasing your chance to crash. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next week, could be sometime in the next year. And if you do crash, there's going to be a very high chance at those higher speeds you're going to either seriously injure yourself or someone else, or you're going to die.
Muddy says everyone should expect police enforcement anytime, anywhere on our roads.
Speed is responsible for 75% of death and serious injuries nationally, and those figures are replicated in Tasman District. And so it's one of the main focuses for us in our road policing. We know that people still speed or operate on a tolerance above a speed limit, and we don't want that to happen, because we know that for every kilometre you go over 80, 90 or 100 kilometres per hour exponentially increases your chance of crashing, and if you do crash it increases your chance of either being killed or seriously injured.
Marty Tunley says police have heard all the reasons why people speed, but there's really no excuse. He says if you're driving above the speed limit, expect the appropriate enforcement action.
Most of the time when people give us an excuse as to why they're speeding, they're just trying to get somewhere. Yet all our studies, and people just know this themselves, that when they actually get to that point, and most people around Tasman aren't going that far, is that they probably save 45 seconds or 5 minutes, and it's just not worth the risk that I've spoken about in terms of what could happen if you speed.
Marty says major risks on Tasman's rural roads are complacency and distraction.
People get comfortable driving the roads that they mostly drive on. So when we talk about Tasman, the main arterial rural roads, the highways that connect us into Nelson or down towards Wakefield or out towards Motueka, people are comfortable, they're used to those speeds, they're used to a flow, and they get more confident. And the more confident you get, sometimes you then increase your speed. Yeah, some people get slack, or when you're comfortable you start to get distracted by things. and that brings in some other dangers that we focus on as well, and distraction accompanied by speed, especially around intersections and that sort of thing. It just adds to the what could go wrong.
Councillor Jo Ellis is on the Nelson Tasman Regional Transport Committee. She lives on a rural road near Richmond and says she sees risky driving nearly every day.
Travelling at a reduced speed creates the opportunity to react when something unexpected happens, whether it's stop movements on the road, someone pulls out of a driveway quickly, children and cyclists are on the side of the road. It gives you that chance to react. The main thing about reducing speed on roads is to make sure that everybody gets home safe. And by taking an extra couple of minutes to get somewhere, those that love you would rather see you home than there sooner.
Deputy Chair of the Regional Transport Committee is Brent Maru. Brent's a Motueka Ward councillor and covers many kilometres each week on council business. He says it's up to all of us to take responsibility for our behaviour on the roads.
So I guess from a Tasman District Council perspective and a Regional Transport Committee perspective, a partnership addressing harm on our roads is significant. So I guess we all know there's many causes of crashes around our districts, and there's many debates over speed limits and speeds on our rural roads. But I guess one thing we can't escape is that speed is a contributing factor that it greatly enhances harm to anyone who's involved in a crash. So we can't get away from the absolute fact that the faster we go and impact in a crash, the more devastation is going to be caused. So, you know, I guess we just reach out to the community going, let's look after ourselves, let's respect each other on the road, let's drive to the road conditions and the speed limits, and just recognising if you're one of those slower drivers, perhaps pull over and let other drivers pass. But you can't come away from the faster we go, the bigger the impact, the bigger the harm.
Tasman District Council Transportation Manager Jamie McPherson says he's in full support of the campaign, with the latest figures showing serious crashes on Tasman local roads, not including state highways, having doubled in the past 5 years.
I think it would be worth dispelling the myth that any of our roads are safe. In reality, I would consider and recommend people judge and use our roads as if they're all unsafe. Safety is created by the actions of people. You know, that means you don't have to drive to the number on the speed limit sign. You need to drive to the conditions. You need to expect other people to make mistakes. You should basically treat every other vehicle on the road as if it is a missile, you know, trying to seek you out. You know, drive defensively. You know, I have teenagers now, and I think about how I should be teaching them to drive, and the importance of what driving defensively really means. It means allowing for others' mistakes. Most of the crashes that occur on our local road network are simply human errors, and they have a massive impact on people.
Jamie says the evidence is very clear from multiple New Zealand and international studies that death and serious injuries have reduced where speed limits have been reduced on rural roads. He says there's so much research that supports that, he hopes that it's now considered an indisputable fact.
There's no real patterns to the crashes on our roads. When we had, you know, higher crash numbers in the bad old days in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, we used to have what we call black spots. And those are places on the road that seem to attract crashes. And those were identified and those were treated. And now we have quite dispersed crashes. That makes it really hard to predict where the crashes would be. I mean, we have data that shows the roads where there is more traffic have more crashes, so you've got to be aware of that. But honestly, it's like lightning. A crash can strike anywhere, and it's usually when people least expect it.
District Road Policy Manager for Tasman, Inspector Marty Tonley, talking with Darren Palmer about the new road safety campaign, Better Together, that focuses on speeds on rural roads. With the increasing frequency of impactful weather and environmental events, preparedness is the key to coping in an emergency. To raise awareness, the Mohua Emergency Preparedness Expo is being held at the Golden Bay Rec Park Centre over the weekend of Saturday the 2nd and 3rd of May. To find out how the Emergency Preparedness Expo has come about, we spoke with Tasman District Council Education and Community Partnerships Officer Claire CJ Webster.
So working in partnership with Mohua 2042, I wanted to run a resiliency expo here in Golden Bay for locals to have them all have an opportunity to learn a whole lot more about what the community preparedness plans are about and the layers of support that are available and the knowledge that people need to have. And it's kind of a bit of a spring on from what Wakefield Expo did a year ago. So I wanted the similar event here in Mohua.
Earthquakes, flooding and wildfires are all major event scenarios for Golden Bay. Learning what you need to know when it comes to looking after family, pets, friends and community is critical these days.
We all know that we're a really isolated community or series of small communities, so people are aware that we're going to need to look after ourselves. But there's so many facets that people don't tend to think about. What will they do if there's no electricity and they can't use their bore to get water? What will happen if there's a big fire and a strong nor'westerly wind over summer, you know? What would happen with a big earthquake and tsunami risks? You know, there's so many kind of components for people to think about that it means they can increase their resiliency. I've been working with lots of communities here about developing their own local plans, and I'm kind of saying, let's plan for a month. Because if the Alpine Fault goes, we're not going to get help for a month because the big communities need help first. So we need to be able to look after ourselves. And so that was my initial thing about wanting this expo, was how can I help all the communities of Mohua know that they've got the items and skills and knowledge to survive a month.
That was Council's CJ Webster. And now Mohua 2042 coordinator Andy Hayes picks up the story.
Well, CJ has done quite a bit of work with Mohua 2042 in the past. And yeah, she's quite closely connected in with the Board of Trustees there. So yeah, she just came along to one of our regular check-ins and yeah, proposed the idea. And yeah, we were all really keen on it. And I think between CJ and the Board of Trustees on Mohua 2042 and myself, we've got a pretty broad covering in the community and all the different community organisations. And yeah, I think it's naturally just grown like over the last few months, just as we've reached out to more and more people. People have been offering more and more ideas of how they want to contribute and giving us ideas. And yeah, it's been a really exciting process and an event that I'm really glad CJ suggested.
The expo is spread out over 2 days in May, the 2nd and 3rd, at the Golden Bay Rec Park Centre. Sunday between 10 and 4 features interactive displays, guest speakers, market stalls, entertainment, food trucks and emergency vehicles. And Saturday between 9 and 2, there will be free sandbags available to prepare for any future flooding.
There are sandbags out in the community, but in the case of an emergency, actually having them distributed out in the community is where they really need to be.
Sure.
And I guess the idea is if there's, you know, 10 to 20 sandbags per household, you know, if something happens in a local community, you've got your sandbags, but then also your neighbours will have sandbags and you can pull together and use those rather than relying on, you know, a centralised place to store them all. Initially, we were looking at just doing the expo on the Sunday, on the 3rd of May. But yeah, the more and more people were wanting to contribute, the event has kind of grown into almost a weekend of resiliency activities. And so on the Saturday, we had the Rapid Relief Team, who are a national organization, but their Motueka branch had offered to bring their sandbagging machine along to help make sandbags to distribute into the local community. And so, yeah, we recently spoke to Solly's and a few other organisations, and I think everybody's on board with doing this. And so Solly's have donated a whole load of sand to make up the sandbags. And yeah, I think the local roading crew as well, I think they're going to come and bring their own sand as well. And it's a chance to, yeah, just get everybody ready for the stormier seasons that are coming. And at the same time, like, we're going to have a barbecue and a fundraiser for Nelson Heli Rescue, and it would be great if we could have had the helicopter come over and join the event, but, you know, given the price of fuel at the minute, it wasn't going to be.
Mauhua 2042 coordinator Andy Hayes. And the Emergency Preparedness Expo is being held at the Golden Bay Rec Park Centre over the weekend of Saturday the 2nd and Sunday the 3rd of May. Details on the show notes, along with links for feedback to the Tasman Annual Plan 26-27 and for the latest news on Plan Change 81. I'm John Bullock, and you've been listening to Tasman Report, a production of the Tasman District Council.
The podcast you just listened to was first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz.